Hello, everyone. It's George from Ireland. Hello. This is No One Left to Lie To by Christopher Hitchens. I remember I wrongly looked up as Nobody Left to Lie To by the late lamented great Christopher Hitchens. So there he is, Hitch. We're going to get a good. It's too bright. You can't really see the photo of him. Anyway, I'm first recall seeing this in a bookshop in Oxford in 2004 when I was stony broke, not purchasing it. So I've read most of his books now. And he's a fabulous polemicist. So this is an anti-Clinton diatribe. In case you don't know, William Jefferson Clinton, being the 42nd president of the United States, serving the 20th of January 1993 till the 20th of January 2001. And I recall watching his inauguration. I was at prep school, but due to have a debating session, but the headmaster said, "Oh, well, I just realised it's when Clinton's being inaugurated. We'll watch that instead." And there he had was at Maya Angelou. Read or whatever that or a celebrated poem of hers. So Hitchens was a man of the left, considered himself a Trotskyite, or is it Trotskyist, in the International Socialist British Labour Party, lived in the United States from about 1981 onwards, eventually became an American citizen. So he worked wrote for was at The Nation and various other publications, Vanity Fair, but living in Washington, D.C., reporting the political scene. So obviously the Democrats were too right-wing for him. But they weren't as bad from the Republicans from his standpoint. But he abominated Clinton. So he thought that Clinton was utterly two-faced. He pretended to be liberal, but actually he defeated the Republicans by copying their policies. He was utterly selfish, vicious, inhumane, had no moral bottom line, and so on. Had just vile personal habits. Was extremely dishonest and was a disgrace for the Democrats, led them in the wrong direction, pursued really pernicious regressive policies, as Hitchens saw it. And he also reviled Bill Clinton's wife, Hillary Clinton, or as she then went, Hillary Rodham Clinton, wanting to maintain her maiden name. And indeed, she stood for the Democrats in 2016 and notoriously lost to Donald Trump, despite getting 2 percentage points more than the vote. Now, Hitchens died in 2011, but even then, well, into the 2008 election, there'd been talk about her becoming the Democratic nominee, lost out to Barack Obama. But back in 2008, when Hitchens was still hale and hearty, saying, "There are those of us who feel this nation is somehow disgraced if Hillary Clinton doesn't at least get a shot at the presidency, and there are those of us who can live without her." But anyway, he abominates Bill Clinton, and his loathing comes through. So there's a very good timeline. He can quote chapter and verse, Clinton's manifold dishonesties, and also his triangulations, as in there's a Democrat position, there's a Republican position. He goes halfway in between to win over some independents, not lose too many of the Democrats. And electorally, it was a successful strategy. Now, okay, there was 1994 when Newt Gingrich led the Republicans to take back the House of Representatives. But the economy is going fairly well under Bill Clinton. He actually left office with quite high approval ratings. Bill Clinton notoriously had an extramarital liaison with his intern, Monica Lewinsky, in the White House in a room he called the Oral Office. Sorry, it's called the Oval Orifice. Sorry, the Oval Office. I'll get there eventually. Parallepsis. Now, these days of the Me Too movement, people would take a rather less indulgent view of this. Now, I wouldn't care if he had an affair with 100 interns. The thing is, he lied about it, and he lied about it under oath. That's perjurious. It's a crime. Was he going to be impeached? And then he eventually fought it off successfully. Things, but the economy's going quite well. It was nothing to do with that. Did he lie under oath? Yes, he did. He could have told the truth or simply not answered the question. But anyway, so Hitchens is very pugilistic. There's a lyricism to his prose. There's a dynamism constantly driving it forward. It's very engaging pen portraits. One of his irritating habits is to interrupt his own sentences. Plenty of allusions to historical figures. So he manages to weave in quotations very well. So it's bitingly ironic in places. So the mordancy of his wit is very rich. So it's very engaging, unputdownable. So it manages to make a rather complex story comprehensible. And those got an advanced vocabulary is seldom too recondite. And so he's got some quotations from various other classics of American political literature. But I'll start reading a bit of chapter one. It is told of Huey Long Then contemplating a run for high office, he summoned the big wads and donors of his great state and invited them thus. Those of you who come with me now will receive a big piece of the pie. Those of you who delay and commit yourselves later will receive a smaller piece of the pie. Those of you who don't come in at all will receive good government. A touch earthy and plebeian for modern taste, perhaps, but there is no doubt that the kingfish had a primal understanding for the essence of American politics. This essence, when distilled, consists of the manipulation of populism by elitism. That elite is most successful when which can claim the heartiest allegiance of the fickle crowd and can present itself as most in touch with popular concerns, can anticipate the tides and pulses of opinion, can in short be the least apparently elitist. It's no great distance from Huey Long's robust cry of every man a king to the insipid inclusiveness of putting people first. But the smarter elite managers have learned in the interlude that solid, measurable pledges have to be distinguished by a reserve tag that earmarks them for the bankrollers and backers. They have also learned that it can be imprudent to promise voters too much. Anyway, he goes on about how Clinton gutted welfare and so forth. Clinton, a mass murderer, particularly of children in his own country, an oppressor of the Palestinians, an apologist for frank racist policies in the Middle East, for an apartheid state, who, given his due, helped to midwife equality in South Africa, but was an outspoken advocate of vicious racist violence against the Palestinians. So-called peace accord where the Palestinians had to more or less surrender, and then Israel was breaking the deal, particularly Netanyahu, he gave him a pass. You know, he would still give them arms with which they carried out their atrocities, fund them, really just sickening. So seen as a moderate, and, you know, feminazis supported him, and it's several women accused him of sex crimes against them, up to and including rape. Now, he might be as innocent as a lamb, but why did he pay $850,000 to one of them? This is the values of 30 years ago. $850,000 if he'd done nothing wrong. Now, $850,000, that's about $2 million in modern values. Why would you pay $2 million to someone if you'd never done anything to that person? He's never committed a sex crime against me. May I have $2 million, please, Bill? I met him once. And so on. So, but these days of the Me Too movement, accusation equals conviction, but somehow he gets a pass. And the parity of power was not there in his relationship with his 22-year-old intern. He was a 48-year-old president. Now, I don't deprecate him for having that relationship with his little humidor, Monica Lewinsky. He's very generous to her. He splashed out on a dress, defaming her, saying that she was a fantasist, a stalker and stuff like that, lied and lied and lied. And then till finally the truth came out, trying to divert attention by bombing a pharmaceutical factory in Sudan because of that. And one of the things that really got Hitchens goat was when, during the 1992 campaign, Bill Clinton, then governor of Arkansas, flew back to his estate to sign the death warrant for Ricky Ray Rector, a mentally subnormal man to be executed in Arkansas. You know, a man who, yes, had shot dead a police officer, but Ricky Ray Rector had the mind of a toddler, had no idea what he was doing, no concept of death. To him, it was like a cartoon. So it was actually a terrible, terrible crime. And these really no-nonsense, extremely hard, maybe even cruel prison guards, even they were moved to tears by it, realizing they were, in effect, murdering a toddler. Ricky Ray Rector, a man mountain, that he had no idea what he was doing. He didn't grasp the concept of death. His pecan pie or whatever it is, last meal, he said he'd save love for later. There wasn't going to be a later. He didn't know what death was. But that's how he couldn't be outflanked by George H. Bush, that's George Bush Sr., on the death penalty, just the way Michael Dukakis, the Democrats' candidate in 1988, was brought down over the whole, what's it called? I can't remember the guy's name now. Become BH, is it Billy something? Billy Hutchins phenomenon, sort of a man that Dukakis had let out of prison early on some parole thing and then committed rape. Willie Horton, that's it. Anyway, so I accordingly recommend it. It's an intriguing, thoroughly engrossing book. So yeah, he's very combative. That's always his style, and he really demolishes a thoroughly vile specimen called B Bill Clinton, who sadly is seen as some sort of elder statesman when he should be really seen as diabolical. Right. Thank you for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, donate PayPal, georgecallan7@gmail.com. And thank you for your comment there, Jessica. Vegan. Vegan? I'm not a vegan. See these glasses, did they even help? Goodbye.